You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Pacers podcast for a special playoff edition of the Pacers Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm one of your co-hosts of the Locked On Pacers podcast. And joining me on the other line is my other co-host, Mr. Tony East. Tony, that sucked.
That 74. Dude, remember when Reggie Miller in 2004 went up for that Tayshaun Prince blocked layup and they had 68? That was 15 years ago. That was a horrible, horrible, horrible second half.
All right, so two things. One, this podcast, we decided not to have a pre-show meeting. We're just going passion straight up. So if we're looking up stats as we talk on this podcast, that's why. We didn't want you guys to hear our passion is better. Yeah, Tony called it the passion podcast.
Yes, like passion. Corey Joseph should never be your leading scorer in a playoff game ever.
Yeah, I agree. And then the second point that I want to go back to the point you said about Reggie Miller is this reminded me of the 2004 Pacers would have been embarrassed to score this little
point.
I mean, and that team was winning games 73-70, 68, 65, and scoring 74 points for them would have been embarrassing. And that's
given the pace of the game, like 90 to 100, I'm okay with. You know, they've scored 45 in the first half, but that was like kind of the flow. It was slow. But then that third quarter. Oh, like.
So were you waiting for that to happen? Because I was. I was sitting here.
I was too.
All right, where's the quarter where they score 12 points and they end up down by 10?
It's such a hard grappling for me right now because a lot of the looks in the first 5 minutes of the third were good shots. They just missed a lot of them. And then after that, you know, from 7 minutes to Corey Joseph got the first made shot, which was a goaltend. It didn't even go in the basket. From that whole stretch, they were just like forcing up jumpers and long twos and – you know, it felt like they were trying to end the slump, not trying to get the best shot. And it was one of the worst stretches I've ever seen this team play.
I mean, it reminded me of a couple of times this year where it just spirals out of control, where they can't hit shots for 3 or 4 minutes. And then it becomes like a desperation. We need to get a bucket to break the spell. And then you got Sabonis who's throwing up, you know, kind of floaters
Corey Joseph launching a baseline floater.
Or just like dribbling around trying to create his own shot because he doesn't trust himself to score. Like without Oladipo, this has been a problem the whole month of March, is they don't have any like go-to offensive move of like, okay, we can't get a bucket, let's run this play. And that's been the problem. I think we knew
this would happen going into this game. It's just to see it so obviously happen and to the highest possible extreme where in an entire quarter, you only make two shots like Josh McRoberts missing in the perfect quarter, like levels, like the opposite of that, basically, you know, that's a level below even what I thought would happen if their offense dried up. And even if they score 18 in a quarter, which is still a bad quarter in the modern NBA, this game goes to overtime. Like, it was that bad.
So, do you blame – I think I blame right now the lack of creativity on offense. There's no
– They went to Sabonis, and Kojo because of foul trouble with about 8.5 to go in the quarter. And the first two possessions Sabonis was in, they got a wing three – an open wing three for Wes Matthews that didn't go in. And then they had the Kojo open baseline floater that didn't hit a thing. And then from then on, there was just nothing running. It was an elbow or wing dribble handoff through Sabonis every time. And Al Horford or Jaylen Brown blew it up every single time.
So do you blame the lack of talent they have on their bench or the coaching? That's what I'm trying to figure out, I guess.
Some of both. I think both is my answer. I'm not going to blame any one thing for anything. It seems like after bad games, we as people are always inclined to blame a coach instead of players, even though every single player shot under 50% except for Corey Joseph, of all people, by the way.
He was hitting some nice threes in the first half, too. He was one crazy one.
Full credit to him. He played a good game.
Yeah.
He actually was the only guy I'd give, like, I might do grades after this podcast, so I'd give a grade to. So some of both. But the flip side to defend everybody here, too, is like, lack of talent is what it is. Like, these players are who they are. They've played 82 games. Like, what is Nate's creative card to play besides Aaron? And that is something we should talk about because, you know, I've said I wouldn't play Aaron in the series, but all of a sudden now you have Darren Collison with foul trouble where he's sitting out for portions you wouldn't normally have him out. Now, given that, I might have thrown him in as my creative card.
All right. So I've got one that's not Aaron related yet.
Okay. Go.
So I know I think we can both agree the Pacers are not going to win the NBA Finals, probably when we make the East Finals. So there's no need to sort of be sitting back and saying, okay, we need to manage our guys. We can't play, you know, the Rockets, for example, if they weren't the four seed, would manage. We can't play seven guys the first round because we're trying to make a long run. But the Pacers probably need to shrink the rotation. They need to go with their best. They have seven good players, and then, you know, depending where Evans and McDermott is, but they got to shrink to seven guys and just say, we've got these seven players who are actually good, who can play on the court, who aren't huge liabilities when they're on the court because they can make plays, and you play them 35, 40 minutes because what else can you do? I mean, like, you don't think these guys who are NBA talent level guys can't be on a court for 38 minutes and in a big game when they're playing every other night or so? I mean, they got 2 days off for the next game, right? Wednesday. So, like, it's not like you're not playing for the long term. You're playing to win this series. And that was the problem last year. McMillan,
Doug and TJ were bad. They were bad.
Well, no, and McMillan has always kind of done this thing where he's trying to, like, manage the game. Like, it's a regular season instance where he's trying to, like, get the guy the right amount of rest so he can go the last. It's like, no, you have to win this game at this moment to go to the next round. You cannot worry about the next game. It's about winning the game in front of you. It's just, and they just need to, you just need to do that. Kind of be like, you know what? We're going to play our best guys. We're not going to try to make a rotation 9 men so we can get guys playing only, you know, Miles Turner. He had foul trouble a little bit too, 30 minutes. And that's the trouble there. You get a foul trouble, you get
that's what extend. I was going to say. Doug had to play today because of fouls. TJ Leaf did not have to play today.
No, and honestly, either did Tyreek Evans, who I guess in the first half he played
he was
well.
Great
so
in
what,
the first quarter,
so what
yeah.
can you do? You got to play in the second quarter. I mean, that's the kind of you give him a shot if he played bad. But I mean, I think you've got to go to seven guys almost in most instances. And I mean,
seven and a half.
Yeah. Well, and you have the 7.5 is if somebody gets in foul trouble, essentially.
Yes.
Which I mean, I guess everybody was in foul trouble today, right? I guess you look at Collins was in foul trouble, Thad was in foul trouble.
How
Bonus
many
Parsley
had
was,
four
I guess.
Were just garbage.
Well, I mean, yeah,
Turner's
I mean, that,
fouls
I
were all fouls. I'm pretty much everybody but Thad, all their fouls were fouls. Yeah, no problem. Two of Thad's fouls, I was like, are you kidding? What?
Yeah, I mean, it's Thad being aggressive and then just
it's who he is.
Yeah, and then just having a tight whistle, I guess is the right way to put it.
Yeah, it's tough.
I mean, the thing is, though, even with his three fouls in the first half, they were still winning the game. Like,
fantastic defensive first half. If you want to take away some positives, their defense the whole game, to be fair, was pretty good.
Yeah, but this is the problem with this team is this has been the problem with the Pacers, I think, almost the entire 21st century is that they are a great defensive team, but it's always, can they score enough points to win games? They never seem to be able to. Doesn't matter who the coach is, whether, you know, since 2000, they've had six, seven coaches, right? I mean, talking Bird, Carlisle, O'Brien, Vogel, McMillan. Nobody's been able to find the recipe of how to get a good offense. I mean, like, it seemed like for a little while you maybe had it with Vic and you just said, and that was kind of McMillan's, just let Vic go. But they can't seem to figure out how to create good offense. They don't have the coaches for it. Whatever it is, they cannot figure it out.
Yeah, nothing worked today. Bojan contained even without Smart in there. 4 for 11 for him. In fact, the best shooting percentage by a starter was 3 for 8. That's terrible. That's just horrible.
What's 4 for 11? I guess
36.4. That is worse than 3 for 8.
So. Yes, you're 37.5%.
I'm here to tell you that my math is right this time, man.
I believe you. I just didn't know. I couldn't do 4 at 11 in my head that fast.
Missed everything. They and to be fair, some of his looks were poorly created, but that's a part of the problem that you're telling me. And you're right, is that they just can't create good looks. And especially when they're beating the drum of Sabonis dribble handoff. And like Horford is playing one of the best defensive games I've ever seen and blowing all those up. It's like, do something else. This isn't working.
So do you think this continues the next three games or four games? I mean, three games if they play this way for three more
not
games.
Not to this extent.
But do they score more than 100 points in this series?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
More than once?
No, probably not.
So, right, they probably win one game by doing that, right? That's probably where they win.
Yes.
So if we take that scenario, there's all this handicapping of like, Oladipo's not there, so you can't take anything. You know, you have to be okay. But is there's something to blame or something that like somewhere to put the blame on, I guess, if they lose, or does somebody get fired?
You have
or
to put the blame on anything.
No, I mean, you put the blame on Oladipo not being hurt.
Yeah,
but
you know, your best player's not playing.
Yeah, but isn't there a concern that even like, do you feel like Boston is on paper? They certainly are like the more talented team, but the way they played in the first half and the way they played them this year in a couple games, it doesn't feel like Boston is like somehow put together better than the Pacers, I guess.
But they only scored 84. The defense was good. Yeah. Well, to me, I'm going to do something bad, Adam. You want to do some blame. Look from last year to this year, the three guys they added to the rotation, McDermott, Evans, and O'Quinn, what did they do in this game in the second half for you?
Oh, that's 100.
Nothing. Nothing.
I think we got there in the last podcast. We're like, really, the front office didn't have that great of an offseason. They had a really great one years ago.
They extended Turner and signed three guys who did not help them at all in the second half of this game.
Yeah, I mean,
that's not a good summer.
I guess my thought is going to – was focused on Turner a little bit is – if he, this is four straight years of him having kind of like up and down playoffs. Is this a guy you want to be paying $18 million for the future if he can't, you know, be consistent? I'm not talking about like great, but just consistently good playoff player.
Yeah.
Or above average. Like if he's constantly these games of, yeah, he has a good game, then he has three bad games. Like, are we sure he's the guy you want at center now?
Remember when we both said they should have waited to do that?
Well, yeah. I mean, because ultimately Turner can be your great defensive anchor in the regular season. But to win playoff games is what really matters at the end of the day. You think with Vic, you can probably piece them. They're good. The way they, whatever they have, they can piece together 45 wins. It's getting to the four seed of getting, you know, that's the how you win is in the playoffs.
But the other thing is, too, like, not even just like in this game, but like Vic makes everything easier for everybody else, too, to like play how good they're supposed to play. Yeah, I know they're supposed to do better in this game. Like, and aside to 50-50, like, yeah, they sucked. But, if you have the guy you expect to have when you give them this and do this, it was harder for them in that way. But yes, nobody was up to the bill in this game. Nobody.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean that's the thing.
That's it.
Yeah, even if you have Vic, everything's easier. But I mean, even if you had Vic, the way they played, there's absolutely no way they win this game. I mean,
exactly. Yeah, they shot 33%.
It was done. 10. It was 10 points, but it was really 20 points. They just cut it late. I mean, it was a 20-point game for most of the fourth quarter.
Yeah. Yeah, the Aaron Holiday and 7-point whatever free throws at the end.
Yeah. Yeah. So should they play Aaron Holiday in game two?
The reason I thought he should have played is because of foul trouble. So I'm still going to say probably no. But that minute was inspiring. That 1 minute against the Celtics end of the bench was inspiring.
So, I mean, the question is.
But Kojo was good. That's the guy everybody wanted him to replace.
Yeah, but is he better off? Are you better off putting Kojo in the starting lineup and then letting Aaron?
Oh, no DC. Wow. That's a take.
No. Take out Wes Matthews and put Matthews on the bench and put Matthews with Holiday and
Sabonis. Maybe. I mean, they have to do something. Some creativity is required to beat a team that is more talented than you.
I mean, I will give DC the benefit of the doubt in this game that it was foul trouble. He was bad. Him up the entire time. Yeah, but I will give him the benefit of the doubt. He was
turning it over, which is so rare for him. He had one where he just like lackadaisically lobbed it up into the post, and now Horford's just like, okay, I'll just tip it away.
So maybe he's one of those players. I mean, he sucked the first six playoff games last year.
He did.
Year too.
He totally did.
I mean, so I
100%. It sucks that they waste a bad Kyrie game too.
Yeah, was it a bad Kyrie game or was it just? I guess
6 for 17. Yeah, I'll take that every game.
It felt like Kyrie. What did some? I think somebody tweeted Kyrie's trying to tank the Celtics so he can go play in New York. Essentially,
I mean, Tatum was really good, and Horford's defense was like ridiculous.
So,
but Kyrie is not great. Like if you and Horford Hayward was not great either. Like if you hold two of their stars to a bad game, you got to win. You just got to win.
Yeah, I mean, I think Hayward is. He had this nice little run earlier, but he. In the end of the year, but I'm not sure he's really back to where he was. I think Tatum is the kind of the guy who's their second star to worry about, per se, offensively at least. Because Tatum has got – they have nobody to match up Tatum, really, if you look at when they're out there. I mean, they have absolutely nobody that can guard him.
Right.
So if I was to tell you before this game, or before the weekend, what East team would win the first game of the series, would you have bet – you would have bet the Pacers, right? They had the best chance of any of the East,
Of the 5-8?
Yeah, in the 5-8. Who would you have picked to win? Right, the Pacers. I mean, I would have said they're all going to lose, but probably the Pacers, right?
They might be the only one to lose. I mean, I don't think the Pistons are going to win, but
yeah, but like in that, I mean, that's just it's crazy what happened that first weekend.
It's unrelated to this game. It was just a wild weekend.
Well, no, and it felt like the first half. Oh, they're going to pull it off. It felt like for a little bit, like they're going to hold this team.
What the fourth quarter? They scored more points in the first quarter, right? To me, like I know they scored that five at the end with the garbage group.
Yeah, but it was really 2016. Yeah,
so it was really 16, but Like the fourth and first quarters were not all that different. The third quarter is the whole game to me.
Well, I'm trying to figure out if that's coaching. Like, did Stevens come out with just a game plan to how to hit the Pacers, and the Pacers weren't ready?
They switched everything the whole game.
Yeah,
rare for usually the problem in the third quarter is the team the Pacers are playing. Their adjustment at halftime is okay. We're gonna switch more. All right, Bojan's scoring a lot. Let's switch and guard him more, and then they have nothing for that. This time they're switching the whole game, and they came out in the third and just missed everything for 5 minutes and then got frustrated and stopped playing their normal offense, which some of that is coaching to say, stop doing the same F and DHO over and over and let's do something else. But they did not.
Right. And isn't that
they generated good shots for 5 minutes of the quarter.
Isn't the Pacers' biggest problem, though, is they just don't have – they were so reliant on Vic to kind of be the offensive edge, and they don't have anybody. Yeah. Anybody when it gets really tight and gets really – like when you blow a seven-point fourth, third quarter lead, you don't have anybody to come in and just say, okay, I'm going to score 2 points. I'm going to be able to get to the rim and score buckets. Like whether – I know they get good shots.
They subbed him in, but Horford ate his lunch for a whole game.
Well, right, and that's the Pacers' biggest problem as a team is that they don't have two guys that can rely on to be offensive center points. They don't, yeah. They don't have anybody else. I mean, Sabonis kind of is, but he's a center and – the NBA ways now, centers are not designed to be the focal point of any offense ever.
Especially because they can only go one direction. And Al Horford, full credit to this guy who I've talked up forever. I hope you saw it in this game, not you, but everybody else. It's like, look at his D, man. He was everywhere. He did not let Sabonis go over his right shoulder. He said, if you beat me going over your left shoulder, you did it. And he never went for it. He didn't even try.
So did Baines get hurt? And did
he pretended to get hurt on a terrible, right. Terrible play. He thought he like earned a charge and he slid in front of Collison. It was a horrible, horrible move.
Yeah. I mean, so did it? I was coming up, the two centers work because the first half they were -3. I haven't counted the second half, but they were -3 in the first half.
They care about the plus minus as much as like getting the bench rotation to be what they want it to be.
So when the two guys came in, it was 38-28 and then it was 43-36. I mean, I think that shows a little bit how much of liable the defensive end is of them, personally.
So 5-8 run, it's not a big deal.
Yeah, but it was like over a 4-minute stretch. I mean, in this game, eight points was hard to come by. To that's the 10th of the score.
Yeah,
that's
true.
It did feel like the two centers didn't really work. That's
for both teams.
I mean, I don't have the stat. Yeah, for both teams, but it didn't seem like that kind of worked because at all for the Pacers, and that's
Sabonis Sabonis-Turner playoff showing that we were hoping for was definitely not there. Good Lord. Yeah. Yuck.
It just – I feel like this game is what we expected to happen, and then when it happened –
I did not expect 74, that's for sure.
No, but I expected a low-scoring game and they lose by 10.
I tweeted this. If you told me before the game Celtics only score 84, I'd have been like, oh, my God, they're going to win for sure. That did not happen.
Yeah, but I would have guessed before the game score was 95-85.
Oh, yeah. Like well, these games are all going to be low scoring. They're slower teams that are good defensive teams, but that was That was horrible.
Anything else you want to talk about this game, or you want to take a break and kind of like just go what they can do?
What they should go with going forward, yeah. That'll be our entire podcast lineup until Wednesday is what now.
All right.
But so yeah, let's look ahead a little bit.
Let's take a break first. All right. Welcome back into the Locked On Pacers podcast. All right. So what's the first thing you want to see the Pacers do different than game two?
I want them to avoid foul trouble so Thaddeus Young can play more minutes. Thad, I think, was the best player on the team in this game, despite only shooting 3-for-8. 5 steals. He was everywhere on the defensive end. Fantastic defensive game. Just couldn't get enough minutes because of the foul trouble. And they thought they could match up Horford Baines okay with Sabonis Turner. I want to look up that direct matchup later on, but I think Thad is crucial. He's shown it all season long. I think he needs to play more minutes. Like you said, Adam, you don't even know if there's going to be anything after this. There's no point in saving anybody. Get him out there and make him play.
Yeah, I agree with you. The question is that mean Thad needs to be less aggressive?
It's hard to say because the 5 steals were huge, you know? That some of his 6 assists were in transition after grabbing him, but
are those 2 steals worth the 2 possible fouls every, you know what I mean?
He had 2 more fouls. He only played 26 minutes.
Yeah, but I'm saying
that first foul every 6 minutes, you could throw him out there for 38 and he'd get his 6 fouls.
Yeah, but
12
it's,
more minutes.
It's about how you cluster your fouls. When you get 3 fouls in the first, I mean, it doesn't, you know, it, I mean, I get there's the foul trouble.
I've always thought coaches were too conservative with foul, summing guys out-ish.
That's fair. When did he pick up his 4th foul in the third quarter? I'm trying to remember how early it was.
Oh, no, the worst foul is when he stripped Hayward from behind.
Yeah, when did he get that 4th foul? Because that limited his second half too a little bit.
I don't remember. It was early in the third though, because they went to Sabonis with 8.5 to go.
Which I thought that was kind of the point where you just let that. You hope.
I agree. You gotta pray for it. Yeah, I agree. I'm with you there.
Because the first half, I mean, the same thing when he has 2 fouls the first half, he has to be less aggressive defensively too. He's got to be He's got to understand his spots. Because ultimately, too, he, even though he's not the best offensive player, he's, if he's out there, the offense is running a little bit better because he just is in the right spots and everything that makes the space a little better. When you have Sabonis out there and Turner, the spacing is all screwed up. Nobody knows what to do. And you're relying on kind of a lot of post play or pick and roll. With that, at least you've got somebody cutting and you've got a guy out in the three who maybe isn't respected a ton.
He's just smart.
Yeah, he's making moves to get to help other guys where I mean, I still think they haven't figured out, because they didn't play him all this year, basically, is how did Sabonis, Turner, and whoever, five guys, nobody knows how to play together when they do that.
Right.
Like, and the thing, I guess, in hindsight, it worked in the playoffs is sort of stupid because they didn't try it enough in the regular season to know if it worked or not. They just kind of like threw out there for 2 minutes at a time with the weird lineups of five guys. So who knows what five guys would be out there at any moment, you know what I mean?
Yeah. All right. Your first adjustment, please.
I think it's play Aaron Holiday.
Yeah. I'm still not sure I'm there. If the fouls are the same, I absolutely think he should play. Because Corey Joseph definitely has diminishing returns when he's exhausted.
Yeah, and I'm just trying to figure out, you can't go right, you can't really go three guards against.
But I kind of think you need West, man. You need the defense.
No, I know. That's what I'm thinking. Like, what if you went like Darren Collison, West, and Kojo, Bojan in a center, and then you played Holiday.
But no Doug.
The question is, can you get Holiday and Sabonis to get the same kind of
production? You can get Holiday and Leave, that's for damn sure.
Well, yeah, that's 100%. But I'm just,
there's 9 minutes right there.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm just trying to figure out how you do it, because I feel like you want Kojo playing more with the starters, because that's where you could get the most value. But then how do you counter that, making your bench still good? Does Holiday and Sabonis get on the bench? Is that still good enough? Kind of thing. Can they get enough going?
Does Holiday, Kojo, Sabonis, Thad work as a bench? Like, is that
maybe?
It's hard. It's hard.
Because the problem is their guards are not big guards. They're so small. You need something.
They are. Well, Holiday's small too, though. I get it. Sorry.
Like, that was an unnecessary addendum. Like, you can play Matthews at the three, right? And that's where you could get away with that possibly.
Yeah, you can. Or you can get away with, like, Bojan at the four, which I think that's going to be my next adjustment when we're done with Holiday, by the way. But
yeah, I mean, that's kind of part of the Holiday adjustment, I would agree.
If you intertwine it with that.
So, I mean, so the lineup that Celtics are going to go kind of crunch with is not Baines, right? It's going to be
Horford at the five, and then one of Morris or you know,
Brown, right?
Morris
or, well, I guess Brown started. Yeah,
okay, the only locks in the final five for them are Kyrie, Tatum, and Horford. And then it's just fit two guys around them, whoever probably is the most necessary, which to me is probably going to be Brown, Hayward.
So first of all, so if you play Bojan at the four, who's playing five? Young or Turner?
If you play Bojan at the four, the five should probably be Miles to me.
But then you cannot have Thad out there at the crunch time.
I know. Oh, you're talking crunch time.
Oh, well, now I'm talking crunch
time. I thought you were talking Bojan at the four, not crunch time.
Okay, so non-crunch time. Who are the five guys out there?
If I go non-crunch time and Bojan has to be the four?
Who's out there? I mean, you're playing that mid – looks like you're playing that end of third quarter run.
So I'm assuming you go Bojan at the four, because if they're going to go so heavy to Baines Horford, 22 minutes for Baines is way above his season average. I think he only finished at the season with 15, and Horford played 32 minutes, so – they're going to go big with two bigs, stretch them out as far as you can with Bojan at the four. That's why I'm all for that. And if you're going to be stretching them out, you might as well have Miles out there. And the reason I like Miles with Bojan is because Bojan cannot defend. I mean, I know he's better on fours than on threes, but I at least want Miles out there if Bojan gets beat at the point of attack to protect the paint, you know, make something happen. Other than that, I think it's kind of fluid.
Is the radical solution to start Sabonis at the beginning of third quarter and then let Miles come off the bench?
Thad and the bench is probably their best group in general.
Like, well, I was thinking, if you want Turner to play Bojan at the four, you have to either start Bojan or Turner on the bench.
Yeah, you do.
At the beginning of the third quarter, because you're talking about
– go for it.
Right? So, I mean, this was kind of the conclusion last year. It was like, we're better off starting Sabonis and then letting Turner lead the bench unit, because at least he can maybe take advantage of the lesser center and be the offensive focal point at some point. And Sabonis is more valuable.
He rolled twice in the third or in the second quarter. And Horford had, I was like, what? You know, Horford immediately stepped up a little bit thinking he's going to pop, and he got two good looks at the basket. That kind of creativity works well with Miles if you have him in the right lineup.
I mean, do we go Young at the three?
We've wanted it for forever, man.
Right? I mean, you would think against if they play Baines,
Horford. Talk to Corrales about trying it.
If they play Baines, Horford, and Tatum, you could get away with that.
Totally get away with it. Or if they have Morris in there even, you could get away with it.
Well, right. Maybe the logical step here is not – even playing Holiday, it's who are the five best players and play them. On the Pacers, just play the five best players, which is Thad, Bojan, Turner, Sabonis, Collison, right?
Wow. Wait, okay. The three bigs, Bojan, and then
Yeah.
I don't know.
The Collison or Gojo's.
The best know. Of the group is West.
West is better than, I don't know.
But Collison. Then you're not creating anything either.
You don't have a point guard.
So. You need a point guard, yeah. One of Collison, Kojo.
And I honestly think Collison normally is better than West. I mean, he's had a better year than him.
I think in this series, Adam, that Kojo might be the guy because of guarding Kyrie. But I don't know.
But also, knowing Nate McMillan's past, do they even change anything? And they probably just run back the same thing again in game.
What did they do last year? Because they took away minutes from Trevor Booker after game one last year, but I don't remember exactly how they shook it up. I need to look into that.
I think they just played Sabonis more minutes.
I'm going to investigate this.
I'm trying to. Okay, so last year, well, he was so rigid with playing Oladipo. Like, Oladipo kept wanting to come back in. He wouldn't play him. He only played like 38 minutes.
Saved him for game seven just to sit him out in the fourth quarter.
If he played that fourth quarter without LeBron, the Pacers would have won. I mean, I'm adamant that would have happened.
Got to rest him for the time you're not playing.
LeBron literally cramped for the fourth quarter. You had a chance for the tie game to just pull away and then make LeBron come back cramped to win
Stop
the game.
It. Stop it. Stop it.
I know, but it makes me so frustrated.
I know. It's okay. It's okay.
But then the Raptors were like waiting there to lose to anybody who could just had a heartbeat.
Okay, so game one was April 15th. Okay, sorry. These are hard to find. Why is my internet being so slow, Adam?
But so, I mean, so right, like I said, they're not going to make a change. We can talk all day. They're not going to make any changes. Probably. No,
I swear they did because Booker played less minutes.
Do you want me to pull it up? I can probably pull
it up. Yeah, I got it in front of me now. Hey-o. They kind of cut it to 8 last year after game one because in game two, the starters all played huge minutes, except for Vic, actually. And then Sabonis only played 16. Kojo played 25. Lance played 24. And then all the starters played big minutes.
What happened in game seven? That's where I'm looking at.
I don't know. I thought we were talking about adjustments from game one to two.
Oh, well, they didn't make a jump last year because they won. They destroyed
them. They did make adjustments, though. They shortened up the rotation and went bigger minutes for the starters, which I think they're going to do this time based off of A, what we saw, and B, what you said.
Did they make? I thought they played Booker 11 and dropped it into what?
Okay, I got them both now up in front of me after a million years of trying.
They just dropped Booker to
9. Lance played 17 in game one. He played 24 in game two. Sabonis played 19 in game one, 16 in game two. Kojo went up in minutes. Pretty much everybody went up in minutes except for Vic from game one to two. And then they exalted a little bit of Booker.
Right. Shouldn't they have won game two, too? Weren't they only – they were
they
like,
lost by three.
Right. They made a late comeback and tied it, I feel like.
That was the goaltend game, was it not?
No, that was game five.
Oh. I remember LeBron. Who hit the game winner in this game? Someone hit the game winner.
No, this was just they just couldn't.
Miles played 36 minutes and was very good in game two last year.
Well, this was the game they had to come back from, and they there wasn't a game winner.
Their leading rebounder last year had 6 rebounds in game two. That's not good.
Yeah.
Irrelevant. I'm just looking this up. They did do what you said in that they had the best 7 guys played more minutes.
Yeah, and I mean, I assume that's what they're gonna try to do. I mean,
they have to.
I don't know. I don't trust Nate to not just try to. He feels like
I don't understand the value of TJ Leaf playing in the playoffs. I just don't see it.
I agree with you. I just think maybe Leaf's not gonna play, but McDermott's gonna play. Then if not, I mean, that's what we're gonna see a lot of.
God, it's okay. Also, McDermott's not gonna go over 5 from 3 like that. That sucks.
Maybe might just have a cold.
He had 3 good looks and 2. Why did you take those looks?
Yeah.
His only make he got fouled on. He did not score well.
I mean, should we talk about what the Celtics might adjust to?
Yeah, we should.
What do you think they'll adjust?
Oh, I thought we were going to do
a break. Oh, do you want to do a break and talk about it? Yeah. No,
okay. We probably should have done a break before the Pacers adjustments too, but we're flying
through. We did.
Good. Okay, yeah, let's do another one.
All right, welcome back in a Locked On Pacers podcast. So what do the Celtics do differently? Do they shrink somebody's minutes?
Their defense was so good that I think they're okay sacrificing a bit of D to get some more offense.
So where does that come from?
Probably a little less Baines and a little more Hayward. I don't think they're afraid to do that if they need to.
Yeah,
they only really played 8 guys because Smart's out, so it's hard for them to make any rotational adjustments. Just maybe sliding some minutes around in a different way.
I wonder if Morris gets up into the 30s too.
Morris shot the lights out in the first half.
Like if you see Baines go back to 15, so Hayward gets 32 and Morris gets the other 5 or whatever.
Yeah, that would not surprise me. In terms of usage too, like they had a lot of guys take 10 plus shots. They actually spread it around, just not something you typically see from them. And they only scored 84. The Pacers did a good job of forcing them to do that. But I think they are going to try to find a way to get there. go-to guys going a little bit more.
Yeah, I guess is the adjustment you just hope Kyrie shoots 10 of 17.
6 of 17 again.
Yeah, you hope he. I mean, if you hope he makes two more threes and then you win by 20, I guess this time.
Kyrie was not particularly awesome. He was distributing well. Like, he had 7 assists. They actually did what we said, Adam. They made it. They made him dish when he was getting to the rim, which was appealing to me.
And the guys missed the threes. I mean, they didn't shoot the guy from three. Shot 10 of 28. I mean,
outside of Morris, it felt like nobody shot well from three. Well, like, I mean, looking back, they did okay. But
I remember the Pacers.
7 for 20 outside of Morris.
Last year, whenever the Cavs shot below 40% from three in a game, the Pacers won in the playoffs last year. And then every time they didn't, they lost. And that was the difference. Could guys make open threes? And I mean, that's kind of what the NBA has come down to a little bit, is the way that everybody shoots so many threes. It's like, just can you make it open threes or not? That's how you win games.
But if you box score hunt too, like for changes, you might end up on what we said with the minutes, because that's kind of how I got there. But let's say time, like, the Pacers shot 33%. But I keep saying this, and I know that this is kind of baseless because they only scored 74 points, but I just felt like they got good looks for 5 minutes of that third quarter. You know, the Celtics defense wasn't like so awesome for that stretch. Maybe they make some. They try to tighten some things up to not let that happen. But yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter. They only gave up 74.
They just got 7 more total shots too. I mean, that's,
yeah. They did some okay stuff on offense. They just missed a shit ton.
Yeah,
I mean, 9 free throws in a 10-point loss.
So the question is: do the Celtics go mind game and play Baynes more to make the Pacers think they should play Sabonis Turner more?
If they want to play Baynes more, I think the Pacers should be happy.
Well, I don't know. I think that Turner Sabonis lineup is pretty crappy, and if Baynes plays,
it was terrible. I tried to look up stats, but they're not up yet.
So I mean, I do feel like there's, because Stevens is a really good coach, there's some adjustment he makes that's kind of subtle. Maybe inserts Hayward in the starting lineup. Maybe that's more of the move in two rounds, but
maybe Semi Ojeleye plays. That's what John Krause wanted. He wanted Semi to play to guard Bojan early in the game.
Okay, I mean,
I didn't feel like Jaylen Brown was, like, so awesome in this
game. We both agree there's probably no lineup changes yet for either team.
What do you mean,
like,
by that? Like, rotation
changes? No, a new starter. Like, that was the big thing that
killed him. Oh, no, last year. Is, I don't think so.
No, Ty Lue waited till game 7 to bring Tristan Thompson back in. And that kind of killed – that kind of change. They didn't adjust too well, and that's what hurt them also in game 7 last year. Right? I mean, yes, it's just you don't – I mean, the thing is, too, after one game, you don't react to – too radically, because
I think you subtly react.
I mean, for the Pacers, I mean, that's always been the thing, right? They don't react after a game one because it's one game, but then at some point, if you don't react game two and three, it piles up, and all of a sudden you're down 3-0, and then it, I don't know, like is the barometer really bad this time, or do you, like you said, just chalk it up to just you make your shots, like 5 more shots, you win the game, and that's all it is?
That's so reductive to me to just say, like, make more shots and you win. Like, I know,
but isn't that basketball?
It totally is.
The more shots, most
well,
shots.
Well, you know, a lot of what we talk about is, like, how do they get better shots? But that's, like, why I feel reductive this time, because I felt like they got good shots. I've echoed this, like, 1,000 times. For the big stretch, that first 5 minutes of that third quarter, where the Celtics came back from down 7 to up, what, 10, right?
50, yeah.
Like, 50-48.
Yeah.
Like, that stretch was just, like, they missed everything. And how many of those, like, rimmed out, you know?
Yeah, I mean, do you need to get more free throws? And they got 21 free throws.
Yeah, they got 21. They just missed them, dude.
They got to make more. McDermott, what did
you want? Make more free throws. That was a disaster.
McDermott, who is like, I mean, he's supposed to. He,
if he misses another tech free throw, I'm going to explode.
Oh, and then Turner making 1 of 4. That also was just like, that was, that pissed me off.
Bojan was the only guy doing anything at the free throw line.
Yeah, Evans was, I mean, I guess the right, the end of the day, the rotation is the Celtics probably won't make any huge adjustment. They'll see what the Pacers do. And if they run it back the same, it'll probably be the same outcome.
Yeah.
Maybe higher points. That's it. You know, instead of 33 and 36, you get 38 and 40% shooting.
If they shot 40% for the field, they won this game. So,
yeah. Well, I'm talking about the Celtics get to 40%, the Pacers get to 37.
They shoot 36. Man, the Pacers defense was so good to waste in a loss. That just sucks.
Well, a part of that is because they try so hard on D, it hurts their offense. I mean, it's part of it. I mean, you only have so much energy.
The offense is just too stale for me.
I mean, I think that's the biggest problem is this has been the problem. They just have no creativity on offense. They really have never had that in Nate McMillan's tenure as a coach.
Yeah.
I mean, it's always been either, okay, we have Paul George, he'll make plays. We have Oladipo, he'll make plays. Oh, well, now Bojan can make plays, I guess. And that's like the whole offense. There isn't a lot of, like,
right.
double screens, setting guys up in weird they, corners. Like,
there's more. They have sets. They just don't do the same thing every time, especially when the guy guarding the guy you're doing the same thing at, going at is playing one of the best defensive games I've seen all season.
Well, and the Pacers offense is predicated on the fact that they're not trying to be the team that takes a ton of efficient shots. They're just trying to say, hey, if they're giving you the easy jump mid-range, take it kind of game. And that's how they kind of have been successful in a sense, because they've found a little bit of an exploitation, the fact that teams just don't guard like 15 feet and they can make those at a
We're going to rate. Switch the ball and take the best shot we can, not the first shot we can, has been a lot of what they've done all season. And they
assists,
not even close to the number they want.
Yeah.
What's the number? Boston, but obviously they have better isolation.
What's the number McMillan had set? There was a number, right, that he wanted.
25 is like the minimum, but they like to get 30.
Right. That's like he said, he every year, right, he sets like certain barriers. They never actually reach those, but if you get close to them, they're pretty good.
Yeah. If they get swept, some McMillan job talk's going to start happening.
That's what I was going to say. That's kind of what I was hanging out in the first segment. Is this going to be, if they lose
three? We'll get to that after game three, but let's keep that on the brain.
Well, I mean, I think we're going to see two things. McMillan, and I think you're going to have to watch Turner, because if he continues to play like he did.
Chuck, too. They were both terrible.
Yeah, but
the way off was that? The two guys were both so excited about their future. How do they play in the playoffs? Which one do you keep? They both suck. It's like, oh, well, I got nothing from this
What's going to happen is in a week from now, Turner's going to become first team or second team all defense probably, right?
No, he's not going to get it. Embiid and Gobert are going to get it done.
Damn. So, yeah, he's not going to win awards.
He's the fifth best defender in the NBA, and he's the third best his position, so he won't get it. It sucks.
Yeah, that's so stupid. But what's going to happen is some team will talk to themselves. Like, Turner will have more trade value than Sabonis at the end of the year.
He will.
He's on a committed contract. It's not bad for his defense. And some team's going to talk themselves into him being.
I'm not worried about that at this point in time. I would like to see who plays better throughout the entirety of the
season. I know, but I say watch for that. If he ends up having a bad playoffs, the Pacers will probably.
Well, also, okay, then say the same thing about Sabonis, please.
Yeah, no, I agree. I just think with Sabonis, the thing
I want this to be on both of them, because we spent. Well, and by we, I mean me. I'm sorry to throw you under my own bus here. I spent probably the last 2 months of the season being like, I will make my decision on these guys based on the postseason. Now I'm here. I want to see who does better. I want to see how they play together before I decide what the move is for the future on the centers. And they both sucked, and now I have no answers. So that sucks.
The difference is Sabonis isn't going to be on as big a contract, theoretically, if he keeps playing like this. And also,
I mean, if you're trading Turner to get cap space, then I have other questions about your strategy.
No, you're trading Turner for a player and hoping that you can kind of – because you're trading away the salary number – to maybe get a guy.
You have to trade salary for salary.
I know. But you're trading, you can maybe get a better value for that. So like,
I don't know. So you know, the guy making similar money, you're getting more value from it.
Here's what I mean. You can get $60 million, which is two max contracts in space if you trade Turner right now, because they'll have 40, 50.
Nothing.
Right. No, if you trade Turner for a star with a pick and something else, that's what I'm talking about.
Oh, that cuts in. I'm for that if that's available.
That's what I mean. That's, you know.
Yeah, that's fair. Either one doesn't matter. Figure it out.
No, but I'm saying they want
his money is important. I get it.
Drew Holiday makes 27. If you trade Turner for, because the idea was they're going to just take Drew or somebody like that in their space without having to give a salary, but then you give up Turner, you still have more cap space then.
Not that trade's not a good idea. It's just like if they end up trading one or the other because one makes more, I'll just be frustrated. Not because he's actually the better guy.
Yeah.
We're far off from that. We're not actually. We're only a few.
No, we're not. You might be there.
You know what I mean? Days. I'm not ready to talk about that until the series is over and I know what I would like to do.
That's fine.
I think that we are approaching that. We've reached the point where it's worth looking at after every game.
Yes, I agree.
Today, I have no idea.
Anything else? I mean, I feel like the, I'm also thinking about the Celtics where I feel like they're a good playoff team. All right, go.
I think we need to credit Corey Joseph a little bit for being able to actually shoot the ball well and guard Kyrie well. He was the only guy that I thought played a good game. And in a game where I keep saying everybody sucked, I want to honorably mention him for his own segment at the end of this because he did good.
Yeah, I think he would, if he has a good playoff, whether they get swept or not, he's going to push himself back into, oh, yeah, right, Corey Joseph might not.
I have wanted him back over Collison if I had to pick one for.
No, but there was for 2 months it looked like, oh, maybe not.
It did.
He got a little dicey towards the end. But Kojo's a playoff player, right? He's the kind of guy where.
Playoffs is the real season and what matters for who you keep.
And he's had some really good playoff runs.
Some good playoff runs.
So, and I think it also we're talking about that the Celtics are a team that is extremely experienced in the playoffs, and the Pacers are. Not as experienced. I mean, I have a lot of guys who don't.
Yes.
Well, because they have some experience. You know, it'd be wrong to say, you know, Fats played in the playoffs. But, I mean, every guy on the team, I think, has played in the playoffs. But, like, the Celtics have a ton of experience the past 2 years for all their young guys, who, even though they're young, they have a ton of playoff experience. When you're talking about guys who have made Eastern Conference Finals 2 years in a row, Kyrie, who's been to multiple finals, Horford, who's been to multiple Eastern Conference Finals, like, these are guys who have played a lot of playoff minutes for considering their age, which is very unique. And that's why also I was worried coming into the series because maybe they've been playing possum because they know that all that matters is the postseason, because that's the problem. The Pacers, sometimes you feel like all they think matters is winning 48 games, not actually winning a playoff series.
Right.
And end of rant.
Good job. We did it.
All right.
Adam. Playoff Adam and Tony are here.
Yeah. So this will post on Monday. If they win a really close game or something crazy,
Monday, I think you should post it right now.
See, I was thinking because it was
kind of. Thank you, everybody, for listening to us do administrative tasks.
I've warned the people out there. We hadn't made a decision yet. We just kind of.
Yeah, I think we should post it now and call it to, like, put it as 4:15, but post it right now.
All right, so we'll have this podcast out immediately on the Sunday. So listen to Sunday night. Last night, listen to it Sunday night, because that will help us know whether we should be doing it the next day or the night of.
Actually, tweet at us. Let us know if you want us to wait till Monday. They play next Sunday too.
Yeah, and so what's good? What they play
today? Sunday, play Wednesday, Friday, Sunday for sure.
And then is it go back to Tuesday, Thursday, or is it?
No, it's the whole series is that schedule.
Okay, so it'll be Wednesday or Friday. All right, so. Yeah. So
now that this game's over, it's Wednesday, Friday, Sunday.
So you'll be back on Tuesday, I assume, the podcast?
Yep.
Are you going to do one Tuesday and Wednesday?
I'll probably do Tuesday on my own, thoughts about the game, and then Wednesday with the Celtics guy.
And then we'll be back on Thursday.
Maybe I'll flip that. I don't know. But yes,
we'll be back Thursday to break down the show, and then we'll have one Friday. We might have a couple Friday and Saturday, depending on if you do one with John Corrales.
I'm traveling this weekend, Adam. I'll have to text you.
Yeah, we'll have to figure that one out. That's always Locked On Pacers Podcast. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Pacers. You can follow Tony at T East MBA. You can follow me at Free Madden 5. Thanks for listening. We'll see you guys tomorrow.